listening to Seeing Beyond Risk, a podcast series from the Canadian Institute of Actuaries, where we dive into the stories and topics trending in the actuarial profession in Canada and around the world. Subscribe and catch up on past episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Chris Fivoli, Actuary Communications and Public Affairs at the CIA. Thank you for joining us. As you know, from time to time on Seeing Beyond Risk, we like to feature CIA members who have unique interests outside of their actuarial work. And one of these individuals is CIA member Alex Ryan, who joins us today. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So to start off, maybe just give us a bit about your background, how you discovered actuarial science, and how you ended up in your current role.
So yeah, a little bit of background about me. I've been working in the insurance industry for about 10 years. My story for why I became an actuary is a little bit more, you know, cut and dry. The actuarial journey for me started in high school. I was at a time where I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do with myself after graduating high school. And so really had to sit down with a guidance counselor, kind of pitch the idea of actuarial science as a possible career path. Wasn't too sure about it, but he did put me in contact with his brother, and that was really what kind of like set me down that path. Had a really good conversation with him. He did a really good job of pitching the actuarial career path. Decided, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot in university, and so used that as a starting point for getting a math major. My very first co-op term was with a major life insurance company, and I just absolutely loved it. Like the people that I got to work with, the concepts and material that I was working with on a daily basis, like that really is what sold me on the actuarial career path. I've been loving it ever since. Kind of during that first co-op term, started taking an exam, started meeting other actuaries and building up that network. Graduated in 2014 with all of my prelim exams completed. Started working full-time in the life insurance industry almost immediately. And then, yeah, it's been 10 years since then. I've been lucky enough to be part of a rotational program that's put me in a series of different roles, ranging from second line or corporate type roles, group annuity pricing, model risk management. And now I've been leading a valuation team focusing on non-par Traden health products and helping to navigate the challenging waters as it comes through the migration from IFRS 4 to IFRS 17.
Okay, sounds great. Now we'll take a little bit of a detour. So apart from being an actuary, I understand that you're also a baker and a chocolatier. So I'm just curious, how did you end up pursuing this as an area of interest?
Yeah, so as I starting to like, you know, decide on what my future career path is going to be in high school, my parents also sat me down for a conversation, basically saying, you know, Alex, you're going out into the world. You're going to be living on your own for university. We need you to be a functional human being. You know, you got to be able to survive the day-to-day life without having somebody there to help take care of you. And so really that last year of high school for me, it was a lot of, you know, like, this is how you meal prep. This is how you like prepare meals for the family, baking, cleaning, like really just, you know, you're going to be out in the world. Don't embarrass the family. Don't embarrass yourself by not being able to do stuff. So it was that kind of like a mindset in that last year of high school. I really enjoyed baking. I thought that it was a good way to relax and just like take your mind off of things. And so kind of like going out of high school and then living on my own in university, that's what I would always do to help like de-stress. You know, it's also the healthier option as opposed to buying store-bought goods and also a bit cheaper as well, which when you're living on a budget, it helps a lot. And so that was kind of like my first kind of foray into baking was that like late high school, early university years. And it is something that I kept up throughout university. And then when I graduated university and started working full time, that's when I decided to really take it up to like the next level. And by that, I mean, I was getting to this stage where I completed like an exam, I had done all of my modules, and there's always like a 2 to 3 month period of time where I don't want to start studying for the next exam yet because I don't know if I passed or failed the previous one. So I need something to occupy my time with. And I thought back and I was saying to myself, like, you know, I really enjoy baking. Let's try and be a little bit more serious about it. So I actually started doing night classes at school. I went to college for baking. And again, like the people that you get to work with in college, the things that you're learning, it was just like a fantastic time for me. So that really was like got me hooked and got me started into the baking and the chocolatiering path in general, I guess. The added benefit as well was, you know, you're taking these night classes, you're baking quite a bit of food, and you would, you know, eat a few pieces of it, get kind of like tired of what you're eating. And then it's like, you know, you bring it into the office, you give it to your coworkers, and it became a great way to like network as well, right? And really build close relationships with people. Everyone likes to have a nice little break from work and just hang out and chat and eat some pastries. So that was like the other thing that I really enjoyed about it too, was like that social aspect. So not only are you meeting people in class, but it also gives you a nice incentive to meet your coworkers as well and get to know them a lot more. And then in terms of why specifically like getting into chocolatiering, for context for people listening in, as you enroll in these baking programs, you do have the ability to specialize. There is like a general baking arts program, but you can also, you know, pick a certain path that really like interests you. So there's like pastries as an option, there's cakes and cake design. I love chocolate. I am a huge chocoholic. And so I figured that it would be like a natural fit for me. I've developed very much a love-hate relationship for chocolate now after discovering just how tricky it can be to work with. But it's always been like a great learning experience for me, you know, teaches patience, teaches a little bit more creative thinking, particularly when you start getting into showpieces. But that's kind of like what drew me towards the chocolatiering path.
Okay, that's interesting. And I know, speaking from experience, one of the trickiest things for actuaries, especially when we're pursuing our qualification, is trying to balance work, studying for exams, and then personal interests. So what was your strategy for being able to do this?
Yeah, so two things really stood out for me with that question. So the first one is having clear lines of communication with your coworkers and your boss, your partner, and really just like, you have multiple things that are going to be on your plate at work, when you're working on projects or reporting, in life when you're working with exams. So being able to like tell people and say, you know, this is what I have on my plate right now. I need the ability to be able to split time and focus between tasks, put a pause on it, or defer or reallocate it to somebody else. So really having that like clear communication with people and just like saying like, these are my priorities right now. Don't try to take on too much. That was kind of like the first area that I get pulled in. Like, I've been lucky, I'll say that. My bosses have all been actuaries. They can sympathize with the exam writing process. They get the entire idea of work-life balance, because studying for exams and maintaining your personal life, like, that does take a lot of work. But if you don't have that conversation early, some people may just not be aware of the amount of pressure or work that you're under. The second thing to me would be just setting boundaries. I know personally I'm guilty of taking on too much work, taking on too much overtime when it's unnecessary. Exam progress can start to suffer, personal life can start to suffer. So being able to carve out time from your professional life to, you know, study for exams or maintain those personal interests is important. We're not robots. We need to be able to enjoy life as well. I think one of the silver linings of the pandemic has been placing a greater spotlight on mental health. And I think one of the great ways to improve your mental health is through pursuing your passions.
Yeah, it's a good piece of advice. I'm just curious now, has being an actuary at all been helpful in your baking exploits? Or alternatively, is there anything about baking that helps you become a better actuary?
Oh, no, I think that's an interesting question. I didn't really notice much about the actuarial mindset coming into baking until I started working with sponge toffee, which for those of you who aren't aware of what that is, you have to basically boil sugar till about the point where it's about to burn. And that is a terrifying experience. And with that actuarial mindset coming in, like that risk-based lens, you start to become a lot more aware of things. But I guess like speaking more broadly, I think there are a few different areas where like the actuarial mindset has helped with baking. So from an overall like planning and time management perspective, one of the things that I work with pretty frequently is, you know, building out a project plan for a project at work or trying to build out like how we're going to handle our reporting cycle. Those same concepts will also apply back to baking. You know, like you have like your end goal when you need to be wrapped up your cooking. So you can work backwards. When do certain things need to kick off? Where can you build slack into your schedule to make sure if there's anything that goes wrong, you have extra buffer time to address it. So really like that time management aspect to it and the product and planning aspect to it, I think has been a critical piece. Attention to detail is also important when you're working with your numbers and how you're presenting it, like making sure there's like reasonability checks, making sure like the results are lining up with what people are expecting. Those are all key aspects to what you're doing with work. And those concepts also apply to baking as well. When you're baking, there's certain tactile or visual cues that you can observe while you're baking to make sure that from a process perspective, everything is lining up with what you would expect it to be. Also, just in terms of like understanding what your end product is going to be and making sure that, you know, if you're putting effort into getting a certain like flavor combination, like you're actually for somebody else, like, you know, you're actually able to achieve that milestone. So understanding what the actual ask is and being attuned to what you're trying to deliver, I think that's also another important thing. And I think the last thing too is just documentation as well, right? Like as actuaries, it's important for us to document our work. It creates a clear audit trail. Baking also very important to document as well. Certain recipes you might not revisit for a year. And if you don't keep good notes on what worked well, what didn't, what sort of challenges you overcame, I can speak from experience. There's been recipes where I haven't touched in 2 or 3 years, and I spend a good half an hour trying to remember, like, oh, okay, like this is what was happening during the cooking process. These are things to like work out for. And it does make it a lot more of a challenging process. So like going into that documentation lens as well, I think is important. The more interesting, I think, part of the conversation becomes how does the baking and chocolatiering help me as an actuary? Because I wouldn't have always expected the baking hobby to influence the career work, but I think it really has. I think the first thing that comes to my mind would be improvisation. In baking, things aren't always going to go according to plan. You might not have all the ingredients or tools that you need. Instructions may be unclear. So you need to kind of make things up on the fly. So easy ideas that would kind of like reflect this would be, say you're trying to take a recipe and you want to swap out like flour to almond flour to make something keto. Well, there's certain considerations that you need to keep in mind for when you're doing like ingredient substitutions, like what's the actual purpose of the ingredient in addition to like the flavor. So there's certain things that you need to be able to make adjustments on the fly, but you need to be able to do that, smartly. Kind of porting that over into the actuarial world, with the changeover to IFRS 17 from IFRS 4, there's certain data that we don't have available that we would have under IFRS 4 just because everything is now new and there's new lines of thinking attached to it. So how do you either come up with like a number quickly or how do you check a number quickly when you have like a more limited toolkit? That's where you have to start thinking about like, I may not have all the information that I need to get an answer that is 100% accurate. What can we use in our toolkit right now as an approximation? So that's been one of the aspects of baking that's kind of like helped me is like thinking on my feet, don't have everything that we necessarily need, but what we can get there to get close enough. Failing forward is actually another thing that I picked up on while in baking class. Things don't always go according to plan when you're baking, when you're working, and there's a few different ways to handle it. In baking, if the worst happens, you can always add another layer of frosting, cover up your mistakes. That's kind of like one way to approach it. But you can also learn to embrace the issue as well, right? Not all problems need to cause like a headache. They don't need to be a continued issue. So the example that I like to give, one of the stories that one of the chefs that I worked with likes to tell was for the longest time, she could never make an angel food cake. No matter what she would do when she was baking it, when she would like unmold it from her pan, it would always collapse on her. And so after a while, she actually started to lean into it instead. So, instead of having to deal with and explaining like why her dessert isn't living up 100% to what she was expecting, she put on a chocolate sauce onto it, plated it and decorated it to kind of like go along with the theme. And she started pitching it instead as like a fallen angel food cake. So just because her original goal didn't necessarily succeed, she was still able to salvage it and turn it into something that was still successful. Same concepts can apply in our actuarial work as well. Sometimes we'll do analysis that isn't quite what stakeholders were needing or asking for, but it can still have value in other ways. You just need to keep that creative lens out for like how you can apply it. And the last thing as well that I've noted from my path in baking has just been, how we're explaining concepts to people. One of the nice things about my college experience has been the fact that I've been able to like meet quite a few people, different walks of life, different backgrounds, and having to like communicate and explain concepts to other people like outside of our own actuarial sphere is a completely different experience. Like if I look at my career, 90% of it has been just talking to other actuaries. And that 10% is going to be a mixture of like talking to accountants and data scientists and a few other types of roles, but it's still primarily actuarial. But like as you get more experience talking to somebody who is a stay-at-home parent or they work in retail or they work in like IT, because they have different backgrounds, it forces you to think about how you're explaining things because how I explain something to an actuary isn't the exact same as how I would explain that to somebody from like a different background. And so because I'm forced to think about how I'm wording things to be more inclusive to like who the audience is, that's something that I can then take back to the actuarial world and apply it as well. Say if I'm explaining something to somebody who's more junior, doesn't have the level of experience that I have, being able to like consider that perspective that people have different backgrounds, that's helped a lot with me as well.
All right, well, I'm going to apologize ahead of time for this final question because it's a terrible pun, but we are planning to release this episode on Pi Day, March 14th. So I got to ask you, is there a favorite type of pie that you could recommend?
Oh, I love this question. There's a few different ways that I could answer this, and I'll walk you through the thought process. If you're asking for, what's my personal favorite type of pie, I love to rave about it. And it really is one from my childhood that my grandmother would make. It's a butterscotch pie. I absolutely love it. It's amazing flavor profile. I can never quite get it right when I'm trying to make a recipe. If I'm ever offered butterscotch pie, I'll be the happiest person. One of the other things with baking, though, is that there's the personal preference aspect to it. But if I'm also making recommendations for people to have people try different things, also think a little bit about experimentation as well and using things in ways that you don't always think that they should be used. As a non-pie example right now, one of the things I like to encourage people to at least try and do at least once is you can make bread out of ice cream. Not a lot of people realize that, but you can take some melted ice cream, add in some flour, maybe like a leavening agent, like some baking powder, and boom, you have bread. You can apply this to pies as well. Two big examples that I would recommend people trying at least once. One is called the Ritz apple pie. And so that's actually where you're using crackers and spicing. And I think it's mostly, you know, like cinnamon, some vanilla, maybe a bit of lemon in there. You can actually simulate an apple pie using like crackers. So if people have the time, I would recommend trying that at least once. The other thing that I always like to recommend too is different like flavor combinations that people might not always think of. And for a pie, a really good combination of flavors would actually be lemon and basil, which at face value, some people may not agree with. It may seem wrong. That was my first reaction when I first heard it, but give that a try. It actually works surprisingly well.
Okay, I know what you mean about the grandmother recipes. My Italian grandmother, we'd always ask her, what's your recipe for spaghetti sauce? And she would say, well, it's, you know, you take what's in the fridge and you use what you have and it'll come out perfect every time. So there's some sort of secret to it. I don't know what it was. But anyway, this is a great conversation. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast today.
Excellent. It was nice to be here.
And if you have an idea for a future Seeing Beyond Risk episode or would like to contribute to our blog, we would love to hear from you. You can reach us at seeingbeyondrisk@cia-ica.ca. Until next time, I'm Chris Fiboli, and thank you for tuning in to Seeing Beyond Risk.